broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Refresh Your Wealth Show. I want to welcome all of you that are interested in, you know, kind of the tax and legal and wealth building tips that many people don't talk about, or you get weird answers or wrong answers. We want to be your authoritative source on building your American dream. That means having a day job and maybe a small business on the side or some rental property on the side or in anything in between. We love our clients that are full-time business owners and those just kind of with the side gig. So welcome. My name is Mark Kohler, your co-host with the amazing Matt Sorensen.
Yeah, baby. I'm back. Okay. I'm back. I've missed the show. I've had to be listening to it instead of, you know, being on it. And I was feeling, Christy did a great job in the last show. And I know we're going to hit part two on that today, but I'm excited to be back.
Yeah, this is good. We're glad to have you. And this time of year is
very
so
thankful
hectic.
Today.
Yeah, and you're thankful. This is our, should we call this our Thanksgiving show? Maybe.
That's right. This is the Thanksgiving special.
Yeah. And in fact, it's really common for a lot of our clients on the road to be listening to the podcast. So some of you might be doing the trip from hell to go visit. If there's kids in the car, no more. I'll keep that to a minimum. I was talking about a biblical reference.
The destination in the Bible. It's okay.
That's right.
It you did not mean it as a, you know, as a curse word.
Yeah. Children of Israel did not like the trip into the desert. It felt like H-E double hockey sticks, you know, or, okay. You know, H-E double Moses staffs. Okay. Anyway, but the point is, some of you may be doing that road terrible. Trip. That was good, right? That was off the cuff.
Okay.
Getting better. This is the rock star this morning. So anyway, some of you may be doing a road trip for Thanksgiving, and this is your chance to listen to the podcast. Make your significant other listen to it, and they're like, what in the heck are we listening to? Well, we are talking about building your wealth. And today, we've got, again, Christy coming on later on the show. Christy Parker, our foreign tax lawyer. She's not foreign, but she does foreign tax law. But we'll clarify that later. Anyway, she helped us do a part one, which we may reference a little bit later and tell you where we left off there. But today is about if some of you want to buy property offshore. Now, we're going to do a tax and legal tip that have nothing to do with this. So at least hang with us first 20 minutes or so, and then you can, you know, duck out if you want. But our main topic today at the bottom of the hour is I want to buy rental property in a foreign country. And a lot of our clients do. They have family abroad, and they're like, hey, I can get a better deal on a rental property. The cash flows even better in the second, first, or third world area, and I'm going to have a rental property there. What should I be thinking about? Does that mean I get out of U.S. taxes, or what do I have to do for taxes, and am I going to get sued, and can I even use my IRA or 401k to invest offshore? So we're going to hit all those topics and more. Matt, what do you think?
What if I even just want a cool Swiss bank account?
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to talk about that too.
I want one of those safe deposit box like Jason Bourne in a foreign like a country where I can walk in.
Gun and like a fake passport and like
just
10,000
open it up
cash.
With a gun.
Yeah, of course you would.
That would be pretty cool. Like,
I think we'll talk about foreign bank accounts. If you have foreign assets, even like a rental property in a foreign country.
Yeah.
Or some people I've had clients invest in just businesses in a foreign country. Yeah. But you will have bank accounts associated with those typically to receive your business revenue or even rental income. So just even if we're not talking about the you know, sexy Swiss bank account, where there's nothing on it except just account numbers, you know, no identifying information. I love all that in TV.
Yeah. That's what I want.
We'll talk about that.
That's right. I need a Swiss bank account number that I can have embedded in a chip and then have it inserted in like part of my leg or thigh, like just so if I need it in an emergency situation, I can use a scalpel and just and get into my Swiss bank account. That would be
Dude, if there was a movie about that, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that could be the makings of a movie right there. Look at that. Just off the cuff.
Even that. Yeah. Start out with that. That'd be cool.
That would be great.
All right. Well, you want to do some tax and legal tips?
Yes. Let's get off
I'm ready to go.
Yeah, the James Bond type topic. And you want to do our legal tip?
I'd like to. I'd be honored.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay. The legal tip today, and this is somewhat tax related because it has to do with your retirement accounts. But I want to make two important points about retirement accounts as you're getting to your end. And those are, if you're doing an IRA, chill out. You got time. IRA contribution deadlines are April 15th. Okay, so if you're in a Roth IRA or traditional IRA, you've got until April 15th. Now, you don't get the extension deadline if you extend, but you got until April 15th. But those of you with 401k plans, even at your day job, an employer, to be planning now. If you have no solo 401k plan, we have a special going on right now for the next approximately week, and you're setting up a new solo 401k for your business, that must be established by December 31st. So you got to get your crap together in the next month here to get the plan actually established. Now you get some time to contribute until your tax return deadline for your solo 401k. But those of you that have a day job, you know, let's say you're, you know, corporate America, you've got a 401k where you work, you're putting money in, your company that you work for matches. You need to be looking at where you're at right now and your total contributions you've made. You can put into 19 grand a year as an employee there. And but make sure you're communicating with payroll and HR if you're trying to max out by year end, because they need to know that. They're not going to let you max out on the IRS deadline later on. You know, they're going to make you meet their payroll requirements, which is going to be by year end. So I just want to throw a few tips out there for people year end, whether you're a 401k person, solo K, or you're an IRA person. That's kind of where you should be thinking right now.
I love it, man. I love it. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. I had it on, you know, my microphone on mute, so you didn't get the heavy breathing because it was such a powerful topic. I could have, you know, given the wrong impression there as I was excited. That's a great comment. Great tip. Year-end deadlines kind of gets me excited. So good stuff.
I know.
All right.
Hey, now's the time to plan. I mean, you get a little time off, start planning, thinking about that stuff. And I'm just saying, IRA stuff, don't sweat that yet. Focus more on your company plans for your solo, if you're a solo K person or setting up a new company plan, or you're even got a day job. Those are the ones you got to be thinking about for your end.
Yeah. And on that note, my consultation with a client right before this recording of the podcast today was a client that said, okay, I normally do my Roth IRA either through a backdoor IRA into a converted Roth, but should I put something in my SEP that I have for my employees? I usually don't. I'm buying another rental property. Mm. And I was like, well, why aren't we in a solo 401 or not a solo, but a group 401k yet? Well, I don't know. And so this was an important conversation to have 6 weeks before the end of the year, because if this client wanted to put a little something away, they need to at least think about it and have a plan of attack, because there might be a December 31st issue.
And the SEP, man, you threw that one out. You get a little more time on the SEP, but I mean, there's another wrinkle. Are you really doing a Roth IRA or a backdoor Roth IRA? Because if you're doing a backdoor Roth IRA, you can't be throwing money into a SEP without converting the SEP, you know? So you gotta.
Hey, let me ask that. I had that question earlier. So let's say I have a SEP in my small business for my employees.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to put money in a backdoor Roth. Let's say I want to put money into a Roth, but I also have a SEP in my small business. Isn't the solution the backdoor Roth? Because you can't put money in a Roth if you're participating in a SEP. How does that work? Or I don't know. You tell me.
The solution is the backdoor Roth, but you have to convert your SEP first.
But let's say I haven't been putting money in my company SEP, just my employees. Then I'm okay.
Then you're okay. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. As long as you don't have money that's traditional dollars in an IRA, which a SEP IRA does count, unfortunately. Mm.
Gosh, see, folks, this is why I love this show. I just learned something from the master himself, Matt Sorensen. Good stuff. Man, so yeah, tricky.
It was very geeky, but it was it's something.
Yeah. High five, baby. Yeah. Sweet. Okay. There we go. High five. Okay. All right. Well, I got a killer tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay. Now, on the tax tip, this is going to be healthcare. Ugh, right? Some of you hear healthcare and you just want to turn off the radio
or you did call it a killer, you know, you did call it a killer tip. So
yeah, this is the killer tip, but
carry on. Yeah.
Listen, this is important. Now we are actually dedicating. So spoiler alert, we're dedicating next week's show to healthcare strategies before the enrollment deadline. The enrollment deadline ends December 15th. That to some of you might be the tip in and of itself. You may have not known that, but some of you may be renewing your plan through your employer. Some of you are buying your own plan. Some of you are just thinking, oh my gosh, I forgot all about this. Matt, we need to talk too. Okay, I forgot what we're doing. Side note. If you have a business partner, you need to be talking about it. We're in the same boat as you. So the deadline is coming up. And so we're going to dedicate next week's show to all about healthcare. But let me just give a tip on this point today. We're having a lot of calls about the health savings account rules before year end and the health reimbursement arrangement rules, which is the HRA. Now, if some of you are like, well, I have a flexible spending account at work, something totally different. That's the use it or lose it plan. But for small business owners and individuals, both, we consider the HSA or the HRA or both. So here's the tip today. You can have a health savings account and put money in your health savings account. And if you have excessive medical expenses, you can also do an HRA in your small business. Now, if some of you say, well, I can't qualify for an HSA because my health insurance plan doesn't allow for it, then maybe we need to use an HRA. If some of you go, well, I'm pretty darn healthy, I don't need an HRA. Well, can we get you into an HSA? Well, these are all things that need to, again, generally need to be decided right now before the end of the year. Because if you're going to try and do an HRA before year end and capture some of your 2019 expenses, you've got to get that plan in place, dated properly, and some money transferred before the end of the year. Now, all of our attorneys, our tax attorneys, and the CPAs in both our accounting and law firm can consult with clients about this. We can set up an HRA for under $400, and that includes a half hour with the specialist to help get you going. And when I say specialist, I'm talking a real CPA or real lawyer. Some of you are just going to put money in an HSA. You can actually fund an HSA up until April 15th, like Matt said. But if you don't have a qualifying plan, you got to choose one now so next year you can fund it. So anyway, I've got chapters in my book on this, Tax and Legal Playbook, updated for this year. You can get it on Amazon or my website, markjgolder.com. In my Tax and Legal Library, I have a two-part video series that you can watch immediately when you enroll in our Tax and Legal Library. That's lifetime membership for a few $100, very affordable. Or I'm going to also cover this at the Business Owners Workshop on December 7th, which is a live broadcast. It's $99 and you get a recording of it and a PDF of the workbook. You can sign up for that at markjgolder.com. And that's December 7th on Saturday. And again, watch what you can, then catch the recording afterwards. You're going to love it. And we're going to cover healthcare at that workshop too. So there you go. There's your tip. Healthcare. Don't forget about it.
Love it. Love it. And today's show is brought to you by Mark J. Kohler, America's small business tax lawyer.
I wasn't trying to be, I'm just giving people resources.
Exactly. You're just a giver.
I wasn't trying to be too salesy. Come on.
I'm just teasing. That's a go-to joke of mine. So I haven't used it in a while, so I figured I should fire it off.
Yeah. It was well placed. I thought.
Okay. I appreciate it.
You have comedic timing, Matt Sorensen. Don't let your mom tell you differently. I hear you're going to your mom's for Thanksgiving. Have you been there lately for Thanksgiving?
I haven't, because I've always been like stubborn about, I'm like, I live in Arizona. Why would I leave in November? It's amazing here. go into the frozen tundra of Salt Lake City, you know. But I'm going, doing the family thing.
You can ski a little?
Yeah, the resorts are open. That's a 50-50 right now.
Okay.
That's the other thing, you know, you get with family, everybody's got a different idea of what we're doing.
Yes. Very true.
What it boils down to is how much do I want to do my own thing versus how much do I want to do the family thing?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Boy, we should have done a show on that. Well, yeah. Oh, which is one other tip. This was on the newsletter this week. And if you haven't signed up for our weekly newsletter, always open it and just scan it. Or eventually it won't go to you because the CRMs, the client resource management systems that send out our email, if you don't open it once in a while, you'll get dropped. So make sure you're opening it. This week's tip was, after Thanksgiving dinner, have your annual company board meeting. And you're going to do it with family. You could write off the turkey dinner, the travel, some good stuff. So we've talked about that, doing it with your LLC or your corporation or no entity at all. Having your annual board meeting is critical, and Thanksgiving afternoon is a great time to do it. So get over to the newsletter. It's in my blog. It's on YouTube. Just type Kohler board meeting. You won't be invited to the Kohler plumbing board meeting in Wisconsin, but maybe type Mark Kohler, Mark Kohler board meeting, and you'll get the right articles.
I thought I was going to get a Mark Kohler surf video maybe if I type that in.
Good. My Hawaii workshop last weekend went well. I got a little surfing in.
Oh, yeah?
Nice. Yeah, I didn't shred. I'm just, my paddle power is out. If you're a surfer, you know your paddle power. That's your ability to turn it on and catch the wave. Oh, dude, it's before we bring Christy on, I will say this. It was kind of a cool lifetime experience. The Hawaiian Surf Open was there in Haleiwa because the Masters starts next, the Triple Crown, the Vans, the Pipeline, the Sunset, all that lights up in December. But the first tournament before Thanksgiving is the Hawaiian Pro Masters, whatever they call it, Hawaiian Pro.
Yeah.
Kelly Slater was there. And he surfed. He was in the semifinals, and I watched him in the semifinals. The ocean just went dead. He couldn't get a wave. It was terrible. But he didn't make it to the finals. But watching Kelly Slater come out of the water, 11-time, world champion. This is like the Michael Jordan, the Gretzky of hockey, the Jordan of basketball. Kelly Slater, no one's ever going to touch him. And it was cool. He's taking off his shirt, giving it to the little kids, and just total stud. Oh, man. And he went out to the parking lot after, and I was out there. We were just eating food. Goes and gets in his used 4Runner. Nothing fancy. I loved it. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm talking way too much.
Cool. Well, that's good. I'm happy for you.
Matt, why don't you introduce Christy?
I'm going out on a board meeting with you.
Yeah. All right. Tell everybody how cool Christy is, and let's bring her on.
Okay. You guys know Christy Parker from part one. I did listen into part one, Christy. Just so you know, I wasn't on, but I'm still a fan of the show also. And
do you feel much safer, Matt?
I do. And I just pretty much decide I'm just traveling in the United States. I'm just going to, for a while. So that's a decision I can make. All right. And I hadn't heard all the stuff in Mexico, by the way. You guys were giving all this information about Phoenix and where I live and stuff. I was just,
I'll say this. So folks, if you did catch part one, please do that. We gave, I think it was 13 to 15 tips. I'm looking at my list right here on traveling safely abroad and domestically, I guess as well, but, how to not get, mugged. How to not get kidnapped, what countries and cities to worry about, awareness while you're traveling, good stuff. And I'll share another little fun factoid here in a minute, but I've been way too much on tangents today, keeping it lively. So let's go right off Christy to our – Christy, again, is an attorney in our office at the KKOS Lawyers Firm. She's amazing. She's lived abroad, been to three out of the five – how many continents have you been to, too?
We decided four, yeah.
Four continents.
Okay.
That's cool. I've been to four states. No, I've been to a few more states. Okay. So, and she's so international traveler, attorney, and recently was stationed in Samoa in the Pacific Islands, working for an international firm. And she was out on an island. Get it. She was living the dream. And, so, Christy, first question, is it crazy to buy property offshore? Let's just talk fundamentally about buying property in other countries. Recommend it? is a bad thing? There's concerns and hoops to jump through. We'll go through a list, but what do you just think in general?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's a good way to diversify your holdings. And particularly, if it's places that you travel to, I think it's a really great investment strategy. And yeah, there's some hoops to jump through, but if you're methodical and follow the process, you shouldn't be intimidated by it at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. What should someone know when they start doing this, though? Let's say I want to buy a property. There's a country I love, I've traveled to, or maybe you've got family or whatever, and I want to buy property and this could be personal or investment use or maybe a mix,
Let's call this tip number one. I'm going to make a list.
Yeah. What are you going to give us? Tip number one. What should I know when I'm doing this?
So tip number one for me, I think, is that you start out evaluating the property just like you would evaluate property in the U.S. I mean, you want to look at what you plan to use it for. If it's an investment property, return on investment, what the local rules are, what are your compliance obligations. So really, you're going to start out coming at it as though you're purchasing property in the U.S.
I like that point, Christy, because I was just on a call earlier this week with a client that has a rental property in Florida, Pensacola, Florida. And our whole conversation about the property was really about the HOA and their rules and the Pensacola City.
Talk about a foreign government.
Yeah.
Those HOAs, man, they can be.
Yeah. I'd rather deal with a cartel in Colombia than some of those HOAs down in Florida. Take your life in your own hands.
Boca Vista.
Yeah. When that golf cart pulls out front and turns off its lights, you know you're in for a beating. Yeah. Not going to be good. They're going to track you down. I mean, you're walking down the sidewalk and you got three, little carts chasing you. Those little, they're fast. Okay. Yeah. So, but no, seriously, we were dealing with the Pensacola City and the HOA. And there's no tax in Florida, but this client lived in another state. And so you start dealing with so I like what you said, Chrissy, no matter where you're going, whether it's Florida, Tennessee, Puerto Rico, territory, U.S. territories, they're a different animal, or I'm down in Mexico buying a condo in Cabo, so we need to evaluate the cash flow, evaluate the regulations. I love it.
Yeah. Let me talk about, Mark, can I just breach that little tax topic a little bit? Let's say I'm doing an Airbnb, okay? And this is common, people in Arizona buying an Airbnb, kind of a mixed personal use, but then they Airbnb it or VRBO it when they're not there in Mexico, Rocky Point. That's Arizona's beach is what it's known as. Tell me about taxes. What do I need to know? Do I need to report this to the U.S.? Like, is it going on my tax return? Do I pay tax on it? Do I disclose it?
So, I mean, I guess the short answer there is it's complicated. and it's going to depend on the jurisdiction that you're in. But same concept as in the United States, you're going to probably have some local taxes. And then you're also going to have, you may have some in-country taxes, and then you're also going to have some U.S. taxes. And the real interesting stuff from our standpoint comes from how those two taxes play together. But as sort of a default general rule, you can plan on that you're probably going to get credit if you end up paying any taxes in the foreign country that can offset any U.S. tax that you might have. But for sure, you're going to want to look at the local rules and what they've got going on.
And I like that. And I want to actually clarify that. Okay. Now, everybody, that was a very tricky question Matt asked. And I want to answer it in a different way, too, because there's really two questions there. If I'm a U.S. citizen and I go buy property in Sydney, Australia, a good little Airbnb, do I still have to pay tax in the U.S.? Yes. You've got to report that rental in Australia, just as if it was a rental in Arizona on your federal return. It's going to go on a Schedule E. Really? Mm-hmm. It just goes on a Schedule E. I had a rental in Sydney, Australia. Here's the money I made. And maybe you had some travel expenses getting to and from and blah, 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 blah. So the first concept is everybody, it's actually quite simple. Any rental around the world, you're going to report on your U.S. tax return just as if it was in another state. Matt, sounds like you want to say something on that too.
Yeah, no, that was that. You're right. That's exactly the first question. And that dispels some people that have the misunderstanding that's like, well, I don't, this isn't a U.S. property. I bought it in a foreign country. I bought this, you know, condo in the Cayman Islands. Okay. I mean, are you having personal use of it? I'm not as concerned, right? You're not making income. But if you're doing the rental, the mix Airbnb personal use, it's going to be on your tax return and you're going to have to pay taxes on that income. Now, you may not have, you may have expenses on it, right? You may not
break you can have a loss.
Yeah. And that's cool too.
Yeah.
And like, and then the next part of, is, okay, bummer. I do have to pay tax in the U.S. on it. And Mexico, you know, I had to pay tax, you know, I had to shell over some pesos to Mexico. Well, you're going to get a credit for that. We do have a treaty, the United States and Mexico, is last time I checked, despite Donald Trump's, you know, and all the trade negotiations, we do still have a treaty with Mexico. So you would get a tax treaty. So you would get credit in the U.S. for what you paid Mexico. So if I owed, if in the end of the day, I owed 10 grand to the U.S., but I paid Mexico five, the U.S. would say, okay, just send us five. Because, you know, we give you credit for the other five you sent to Mexico.
Yeah. And Christy, how hard is that to report? So you, I'll let you answer, Christy. So I'm down in Australia with that example. Matt took us back to Mexico, which is fine. He's a warm climate kind of guy. But if I'm down in Australia and I pay my U.S. taxes on that property, or I have a loss, just like a flow through loss I'd have in Arizona, is it? What do you do? Should I hire a CPA in Australia? What do you normally recommend?
Good question. If you're in a jurisdiction that's going to have local taxes, so, you know, if you're going to owe taxes in Australia, this is why you kind of need some familiarity with the local rules, then yeah, I'd have a local accountant do that. If you're in a zero tax jurisdiction, which there are some, then you're just going to worry about your U.S. filings. And I did want to add one other thing to sort of what we were talking about is you're going to report it on your, you know, 1040, but you also may have some other reporting obligations like a form 8938 or the FinCEN form. So make sure if you've got foreign holdings that you are complying with all of the different reporting requirements that you might have.
Oh boy, okay. Now you open up that can of worms.
Slow down, Turbo.
Okay. I like it. Okay. So let's summarize where we're at so far, because this can be a complicated topic. Number one, when I go to buy foreign, I'm going to do the same due diligence as I would on even buying a property across the country in another state I'm not used to, which includes knowing the local rules and what taxes or regulations should I be facing. Number two, I'm going to report the income and expenses like I would on a 1040 for a rental property in another state. Same story there. It's, and you're taxed on your worldwide income as a U.S. citizen. Number three, I'm going to pay any taxes in that foreign country, and I'll get a credit in the U.S. And if it's a tax-free jurisdiction, cool. If not, I'm going to do my little tax return down in Australia or Mexico, hire someone that knows what they're doing in that jurisdiction, pay them, do my tax return, and then report the credit back on my 1040. I'm going to add this one number four point, and then I want to bring up a question, is I'm going to say, you're going to take the same expenses. If you're traveling to Australia or Mexico to check on your property, great. Let's write that off. Now, I can't write off 2 months in Australia or maybe even 10 days, but I could certainly write off a few days going down there and working with your property managers and your professionals mm-hmm. and your tenants and your realtors and all the equivalent type professionals that you work with in any other state. So track your expenses. Now, Christy, you opened that can of worms. Now, when I go to my 1040, the IRS doesn't let you off that scot-free. They ask questions. Do you own property in another country or bank accounts? Tell us what that means. And Matt, obviously you're coming up next with this retirement plan stuff. But
I was Christy,
what do you think? What do I have to report?
So if you have a bank account in your foreign jurisdiction, and I think Matt kind of opened with this, but if you're receiving rents over there, you may have a foreign bank account. If on any day during the year that account hits or exceeds $10,000, then you're going to have a FinCEN Form 114, they call it. But basically, that's your FBAR report. And that has to do with your bank accounts. So often people who are doing foreign investments are going to have this FBAR filing that they've got to do. And then the second one that you've got to be sort of worried about is a form 8938. And this has to do with your, with the property itself and the value of the property. And it's a little more complicated. It's based on where you're living, what the thresholds are, if they're inside, if you live inside the US, or if you're living outside the US. But essentially, if your property meets or exceeds the certain threshold, then you may have to file an additional form with the IRS that basically is identifying that you own that asset.
Okay. All right. Now, these are just disclosure forms, right? So these are simply forms that the IRS wants disclosure of. There's no tax necessarily on the FBAR, not mistaken with the FUBAR, but the FBAR.
that was funny, Matt. See, we should recognize that, listeners, right?
Yeah.
That was good. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for recognizing me. I wanted to say something, and I was like, I got to get a joke in, so Mark will let me talk one.
We're losing people like flies are dropping here, you know, like, joke.
And so, you know what, you're going to, if you buy a rental property, you're going to be filing both of those probably, you know, and just be prepared to do them. Now, here's the thing on those. There are huge penalties for not filing those things.
Yeah.
This is where the IRS is really concerned about offshore activity. The politicians love talking this up. And so they love beating down the IRS for not policing this. So buckle up. Like, if you're buying foreign assets, this is the thing. Your tax reporting, you got to start getting, being clean, start getting this done. Make sure you're on top of those forms.
Yeah. And this is a time to mention, you're not investing offshore to hide income. You're investing offshore to get a better rate of return. And I like what Christy said, is you're typically investing offshore because you go there once in a while. So it makes sense to get a tax write-off for that. You know the area, you may have family there or friends, you're getting a better rate of return, and you're like, what the freak, let's do it. And then I like, Matt, let me just say quickly that this is not just the IRS making sure you're not hiding money. They're coordinating with the State Department. They want to make sure that you're not laundering money or supporting a terrorist organization. And then this comes to transferring money back and forth to the U.S. Christy, where do we need to worry about in this State Department thing?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go next, Mark, was saying that's sort of what this FBAR reporting is all about. And what you need to know is most of your financial institutions that you're going to be working with have their own reporting requirements. And the State Department is able to sort of cross-check what the bank is saying. You know, if they're reporting that you're a U.S. holder of assets and you don't report it, you're not going to get away with it because they're able to cross-check who's reporting what. So be really careful, like Matt said, about making sure you're complying with these reporting requirements.
Yeah, and if you want to get scared, go Google what countries report their bank account activity to the U.S. and the IRS for U.S. citizens.
It's a big list.
It's the countries you think that don't do, you know, like the misnomer on Switzerland. You think they don't? They do. Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
I'll say that this was a big legislative issue, not only with the new Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which a third of it dealt with foreign transactions. Really, it was kind of personal, business, and foreign activity.
Yeah.
But there was, after 9/11, Patriot Act 1, Patriot Act 2, a lot of those legislative maneuvers, when the country was freaked out, the government was able to get a lot more done than they would have in a normal legislative period, because everybody was like, oh yeah, we got to track this. And bankers were like, oh, slow down, slow down. And they just got ran over, which I'm not opposed to. But the thing is, when you have activity in other parts of the world, banks are now disclosing that. Hiding money offshore is very, very difficult. Now, there's asset protection techniques that are okay. And here's the thing. Again, we're trying to get a better rate of return. We're doing asset protection. We're saving taxes. But we're not hiding. We're not fraudulently doing something with that income. So don't stress out. These forms are actually quite easy. They're not terribly expensive. Yeah. It's just making sure your accountant knows what freaking to file.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kirstie. Yeah.
Yeah. So one other thing on that.
But are you implying that I was on a tirade there? I'm sorry. Okay, Kirstie, go ahead. Take it to the hoop. I'm sorry.
I was just going to add to that that there are some changes coming to sort of common offshore jurisdictions beginning as soon as January of 2020. That are affecting sort of British holdings. This is going to be your British Virgin Islands, Caymans, Bermuda, all those guys that have historically had very good privacy protections. The UK has passed recently some laws that affect those, you know, what would be territories for the US. Mm-hmm. And those laws are changing. So even some of the ones that historically people have felt pretty secure that they're private and confidential, that's starting to change. And so pay attention to that if you're in one of those jurisdictions.
Yeah, and I think that was the aftermath of the Panama Papers, if you guys remember that, and the Panama law firm that had a lot of high-profile mm-hmm. clients, members of parliament in the UK, and I think the prime minister's father, and there's a lot of people that got embroiled in that, and yeah, I can see why they're going the other way on it. Well, let me take another little angle on this. I think it's an important legal consideration. I want to buy like real estate in, let's say, Australia or Mexico or wherever. Can I do that? I'm not a citizen there. What are the rules? There's some countries make you be a citizen or do something else. Aren't there restrictions on where you go? What's kind of the lay of the land and kind of some common things you might run into there?
Great question. And this is why international investment gets really complicated really quickly, because it depends on the jurisdiction. I think mm-hmm. one of the main points on this issue is property ownership is not equal a right to stay in the country, right? So just because you purchased a property there doesn't mean all of a sudden that you can go there without complying with their visa or immigration requirements. Mm-hmm. So you want to look at what their rules are. A lot of countries will have limitations on foreign ownership even. Yep. And you may not, as a foreigner, be able to own property. And in those cases, we're looking more at long-term leases can be where you end up investing. Mm-hmm.
I like it. On that note, because I mentioned earlier in the show, since Matt pointed out the show is sponsored by Mark J. Kohler and his annual workshops. Thank you very much. I was in Hawaii on last weekend, and we have a number of Filipino clients and clients that have migrated from the Philippines to Hawaii and are citizens of both countries or U.S. citizens with extended family in the Philippines. And one of my Filipino clients came up and said, Mark, I was trying to buy a rental in the Philippines, couldn't do it. And so I looked that up here in the show. And to be exact, in the Philippines, a foreigner cannot own an investment mm-hmm. property. They can own a residence, but they have to prove residency in the Philippines. But if the condo commercial law in Philippines says you can own only up to 40%. You have to have a foreign owner a local owner of at least 60%. So depending on the type of property, you could have some ownership, and then you've got to look at the rules of what the percentages are. So I like what Kirstie said again at the very beginning of this, when you say, oh, my grandma, you know, is in the Philippines and I could get a killer cash flow property there. Well, grandma may have to own 60% of it, and you can only own 40%. So
yeah,
I like that.
And I've, Mexico, of course, in certain like beachfront areas, you have to set up a trust essentially through a bank. There's a certain word for it. So, and they kind of got a weird thing, which is basically just a way for the banks down there to make some money off you, but you can do it and own. So there's some quirks in every country. The other thing I thought Kirstie mentioned is really important. Is consider this. If you were going to buy a place to live for a few months yourself, and even if you can buy it and own it, can you actually stay there that long? Are you going to get a travel visa past 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Are you going to, and I've had clients buy in Belize and go get citizenship in Belize. If the property they purchased was over a certain dollar amount, they will get citizenship in Belize where they don't need to worry about that as much. So they kind of became dual citizens. And so some countries you can, if the investment amount you're putting in is large enough, you can actually get citizenship, you know, is one way to get around that travel issue.
I like it. Okay, Christy, which I think this is a good transitionary point to ask about entity selection. This show is not about foreigners investing in the U.S. or U.S. citizens living abroad. This is about me having a property abroad. Three different shows of ours in our podcast history. We need to address those others again and circle back to them, update them. But the rules are very different, right? I mean, it could be a trust, it could be an LLC, it could be a corporation, it could be a limited partnership. What's your general advice when you meet with someone about that?
Again, you know, I hate to repeat this answer over and over, but it really is the case. It's jurisdiction dependent. And the other thing you want to know is there may not even be such a thing as an LLC in that country. So you kind of need to get some familiarity with what are their entity structures? Is there a correlation with an entity in the U.S.? What are they calling them? A couple of things on entity formation. You need to know whether you can file them, for example, in English, or if they're going to be in a foreign language and you need to have a translation. So yeah. There's a lot that can go into selecting which entity you want to use. And it often depends on if you're doing investment activities or if you're doing ordinary operations, you know, running a business or something like that.
Wow, great points.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Golden question. Matt Sorensen, can my IRA buy a property foreign? What do you think?
Yes, you can. Mm. But you got to maneuver. I was going to call it the UTEP two-step. If you remember that, I think, I forget who was that. Who was that basketball player that had the famous UTEP two-step?
Hardaway? Come to mind. I like it. I've heard of it. Yeah. I like that.
Okay. Okay. So, if you call your IRA custodian, like you call us at Directed IRA, find us at directedira.com. You're like, hey, Matt, I want to buy. and you're like, hey, Matt, I want to use my IRA to buy real estate abroad, right? Outside the US. We're going to say you can't do that. And everyone's going to tell you that if you try and buy it directly out of your IRA. What you need to do is you would have the IRA own a US-based LLC, which is what we do. And I've had hundreds of clients do this over the years. The IRA owns a US-based LLC, and the US-based LLC in turn ends up owning the foreign equivalent of the LLC or whatever the entity is, and that the US LLC owns it. That way, your IRA owns a US LLC. The US LLC owns a foreign asset. There's no restriction on owning foreign assets with an IRA. And in fact, there's actually some FBAR exemptions on it. If I recall, I've looked those up in the past, but yes, it's possible. It's going to take a US LLC in the middle just to get the IRA investment out, because the custodian's not going to want to own. I don't want to own a property in Australia. You know, but I'll own a US LLC, and then your LLC can go on the foreign entity and go do that. Now, some of those things we talked about earlier, you know, visiting the property, expensing it, having some personal use, that's all out the window. Remember, this is your IRA.
Yeah.
You know, the privity transaction police may not be in Sydney, Australia, or Rocky Point, Mexico, or wherever you may be doing this, but that would violate the rules. So this has got to be held strictly for investment only. What I've had a couple clients do actually is they will, and I've had this in a couple instances, they will own kind of like in the same development, you know, condo, community, whatever, one that they personally hold, and the next one they buy in their IRA. Mm. That way they're kind of there and they can stay in the personal one, check on the other one, and still obviously be expensing that because they're seeing the one that they personally hold.
I like it. And one side note, and Christy, please confirm this. My notes show that when it comes to the FBAR report and these transactions and all these forms for your personal return, the 8938, a retirement account is exempt from those. So if my retirement account goes and buys these properties, the paperwork is actually easier.
Right, exactly. That's why I almost prefer to do some of your offshore investing through your IRA, just because of that. Recently, I've just been looking into the passive foreign investment rules. They're called the PFIC rules. And they have onerous reporting requirements, and you actually get out of them if you're in an IRA context. So absolutely, I love it. I think it's a great idea. Recommend that you do it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to use this chance to kind of toot Christy's horn and her praise her, is that she's, if you've got a foreign interest, a bank account or property, or thinking about doing it, it doesn't mean you have to fire your current accountant. You don't have to fire your current lawyer. But I would retain someone like Christy that's affordable. And because, and I say the word affordable, like, quick tangent there, is if you start trying to invest abroad, it's very easy to get escalated to a high profile law firm where they're like, oh, you want to do this? Great. We need a retainer of $5,000. You're like, what? I just want some advice. And so big international law firms, they can be extremely expensive, and it's really unnecessary for the small investor. And so, Christy's a great fit for that. You can make an appointment for her at $300 an hour. And within 2 hours, and some jurisdictions are going to need more research, she'll tell you, but at least in your initial hour, you can make a plan, find out what you're going to be involved, what's going to be involved, and maybe say right there, ah, not worth it. Or, hey, Christy, keep moving. Let's do this. So I don't know, Christy, is that a common consultation that it makes sense for you and your people? Kind of tell us how that works.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the kind words. Appreciate it. I mean, the scope on this is anything from a pretty straightforward, easy, you know, real estate rental is not going to be crazy expensive, shouldn't be crazy expensive, and has pretty straightforward requirements. Obviously, the more complex your structure gets, the more we're going to talk and spend time going through it. You know, where we're looking at the intersection of the IRA rules and the tax rules, both in the US and the foreign jurisdiction, we might have to do a deep dive on a particular issue depending on what you're doing, and that can take more time. But for sort of your run-of-the-mill transactions, we should be able to take care of you, answer you in a pretty reasonable time frame, and get you pointed in the right direction.
I like it.
Okay.
Boy.
Awesome.
I like that Belize idea, Matt. I want a Belize passport in my little safe deposit box with like a sweet gun, you know?
Belize is amazing. Believe me.
You've been there, haven't you?
Yeah.
I forgot that.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, nice. Man, you're full of them today. That was another good one.
I'm going to second that, Matt. Actually, Belize is one of my favorite places. If I was going to own offshore property, I think I would own it in Belize. Not because of the tax rules, just because I love it down there. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's, you know, it's basically Caribbean. It's got the, I mean, it's beautiful. And it's English speaking, because it was formerly a British colony. So it's English speaking, which I always like. I'm always a little nervous when I'm in a foreign country and don't speak the language. So, but it's cool. It's got its own unique flavor, and it hasn't been too commercialized yet. So, and I've had lots of clients buy down there. It's odd. It's kind of became a popular place. I think it's an up and coming place, and a lot of expats and people have just relocated down there.
Wow. Now, and are you blending? Are you hitting that?
Yeah.
That common.
No, because you know what, Mark, my sense of pride and style is more important than my safety and blending in.
You're not matching the baseline. When I went to Hawaii last week, I'm like, I got to match the baseline. So as soon as I got off the plane, I was in some grungy shorts, a t-shirt and flip-flops. And I thought, you know, I'm going to meet the baseline.
I could blend to that. Yeah. I could blend to that.
But you guys make me jealous. You're like, oh yeah, Belize. I love Belize. I'm like Rocky Point, Mexico. I go to Rocky Top, Tennessee. I mean, that's Rocky Top. Rock top. Yeah, I'm into that, but I've never been to Belize. So you guys are high rollers.
I've been once, so you know, yeah. But it was cool. I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Whatever. So that's how the rich live, apparently. So
yeah. Well,
most of us are in Rocky Top, Tennessee for Christmas.
Yeah. 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 Well, go to Rocky Point, Mexico, and you tell me what you think. It's
touche.
Based on our last show, I'm never going to Mexico. It's too high risk.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, yeah. I sense the show.
It's Sonoran, it's not. It's yeah,
yeah.
No, it's that's why it's seriously a 2.5 hour drive from Phoenix. So it's very popular. You could be to the beach in 2.5 hours out from Phoenix, and it's Mexico resorts, you know, it's nice, but you gotta drive through, you drive through the rest of Mexico to get there.
Yeah. Within 2.5 hours, you're going to be Rocky Point, and within 3 hours, you can be in the trunk of a car.
Exactly.
So, and enjoying the experience of kidnapping. I mean, it really is a bucket list item for a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, yeah, that's true. They don't advertise that.
Kidnapped in Mexico.
It's an option. Yeah.
What an option. A great conversational starter, right? You know, for those at Thanksgiving to say, yeah, I was recently kidnapped in Mexico. You know, who's not going to take that bait? You're like, bam, we're off grandma's, you know, last surgery. We are on to kidnapping in Mexico. So, I mean.
Yeah, I'd rather be there for that.
Yeah, that's a conversational saver.
Yeah.
You really want to have that in your quiver. So you can just like, boom, pull out the kidnap story and off you go. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah,
for you single people, you know, when they say, hey, have you found anybody yet? You're going to get married. What's going on with your significant other? You can just, well, I've been thinking about recently, I was kidnapped in Mexico. They'll completely forget about the single scenario, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're making some great points here. all right. I want to make an important programming note.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Okay. This is an important programming note. Okay. For next week, we are going to cover healthcare. Mm. And this is really important time right now. You have the open enrollment deadline on December 15th. You have some things you need to do by year end. If you want to do an HSA, by the way, you need to have an HSA effective plan now, right? Now you have to have that in effect by December 1st if you want to make HSA contributions for 2019.
Yeah.
And so so there's a lot of these deadlines coming up and a lot of decision-making by healthcare at year end. So we're going to hit that next week ahead of open forum. We usually would be on open forum next week, but we'll follow up the following week with open forum. So just a, programming note.
I like it. And one last big shout out to our amazing Christy Parker, international traveler, international attorney, foreign tax advisor. Christy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Do you have another passport in your drawer over there? I mean, what do you have? Just US?
You know, we've talked about this. I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Oh, so, that's right. Yeah. I forgot. Okay.
It's in your go bag. I like
exactly. The go bag.
Okay. Right next to my Leatherman.
Yeah. I have a go bag for Rocky Top, Tennessee. So I've got some barbecue sauce in there. Essentials.
You know, there's some areas flannel. Of Tennessee where that may make some sense. I'm
just saying. Okay, yeah. I'm just anyone from Tennessee, I apologize. I have totally lost our Tennessee listenership, but I love you. Yeah. I love Tennessee.
Justin Timberlake is no longer listening to the show.
Yeah, he's off now. He's got a place in Jackson Hole. I mean, he's really a neighbor of mine. I mean.
Oh, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm friends on Facebook with him.
Yeah.
So we're pretty much friends.
I could be at the Cowboys Saloon this weekend in Jackson Hole and in walks Justin Timberlake. He walks out. Here comes Harrison Ford. I mean, we're just buds. You know, it's just the way it is when you're out here in the Rocky Mountains.
And people are like, oh, then Mark Kohler was here, Harrison Ford.
I'm sure people say that all the time.
Yeah. Mark Kohler was just here. Did you guys? Whoa.
You know, it's too bad all the good jokes of the show had to be at the end. Many of you had to just deal with the whole show to just get to this good stuff. But anyway, everybody, thanks for listening. Christy, we love you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Christy.
And everybody have a great Thanksgiving. Matt, good luck at the family dinner.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate you listening in. Give us a 5-star review if you like the show. We'll be back next week on healthcare.
Woo. Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.